You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Okay, everybody. Sorry for the random schedule of release on these podcasts. It's been extremely hard to organize all the moving parts of life and get everything working together. So it's really good news in the broad sense, the way I look at it, though, because after reviewing Emery's finances and redoing some stuff with Bad Christian, all this other stuff, it looks like these intellectual properties and these artistic things we do are really working. They're growing. The numbers project well. And the hard part is just to figure out what to spend time and effort on. And one of the methods I like to use is just to do what's most emergency, what's most important, where the biggest fires are. And then the stuff that doesn't get done, doesn't get done. And so this podcast and Break It Down and that kind of stuff that comes from that space is not a huge financial driver. It doesn't have huge audiences, so it's easier to let it slide. Although, that is the place from which really good things get built. So we're going to try and figure out how to do this more. But when the Labeled podcast and Bad Christian and Emery releases and Emery producing its music for Emery Land, those things are always taking priority in a big way. And so it pushes these other things a little bit out. But this one is really fun and really worth working on, and we really enjoy it. And if you're still listening to this intro and this episode of this podcast, and I think you probably enjoy it too. So telling the stories and getting through this and developing this format is something I do care a lot about, and I think is worthwhile. So the main focus on Emery Land is the music, and that seems to be really working. We've had very low turnover, so that tells me this experiment has been very successful, despite the fact that we haven't been making this podcast and we're not doing as many Twitch streams, and the Discord is not getting used as much as I would have thought, but it does seem stable and everybody seems relatively content. But I'd like to work more on this podcast, the Discord, and there's a Facebook group that I think might actually help with that too. So what I'd like to do is try to get everybody to join the Emery Land Facebook group and get acquainted there. And I kind of find that these things spill over one into the other, from the Discord to the Facebook. Like, oh, I know who that is. And now they're over on Discord. And we just hang out in different places. And when it's appropriate and we have time, we'll be on Twitch, of course. And connecting those worlds, they're like people you see in town, in the town of Emery Land, of course, like at the pub or down the street or whatever. And so sometimes these places are more or less crowded, but they're all worth working on the environment of, because the whole thing is a big digital environment. It seems to be working. So we'll roll forward, but go to Facebook, everybody. I think that's an important hub for communication and getting to know each other a little bit more and getting feedback. So go to Facebook, search Emery Land, find the Emery Land group, join it. We'll hang out there and we'll continue to grow all these supporting things while we continue to work on the music. We've got some great stuff coming music-wise. So thank you guys for making Emery Land a success so far. We've been able to redo our budget and get everybody on salary and have this routine thing going where we're definitely going to increase the amount. We're way ahead of schedule on the album that we thought, and we're doing Christmas songs now. We'll have more new songs soon. And it looks like we're going to be able to increase the rate that we were putting out music from an album a year to that plus more bonus tracks and a lot of fun stuff we've got planned. So this thing's being very successful. Thank you guys for supporting. And if you're not, you got to join Emery Land. You can listen to this podcast if you're not. But Emery Land's the place where you get all our new music. We've got 7 songs from the new album. They're already there, and everybody that's in Emery Land has them. And so you can join that by paying, I don't know, as little as $3 a month for a subscription, or you can spend about $45 on Emery merch, pre-order vinyl, special vinyl, or get a couple of hoodies or whatever. If you're spending about $40, $45 with us, any type of commerce, or giving us a few bucks a month, then you're in. You'll have all the Emery music and be involved, and the community, of whatever community we can develop there. You'll have that all year round. It's like living crowdfunding, and it's totally working. So thank you guys for this. Here is what we can remember of when we left from Seattle on September 11th, 2001, when we left from South Carolina to Seattle to move, to start this band, to figure out what our future would be. Little did we know, it's this. Anyway, stoked to be here. Okay, are you guys ready to start?
Yeah, I believe I am.
Do you remember where we left off last time?
Heavens no.
Come on, we left off a good cliffhanger.
Oh, right. Matt gave us a cliffhanger.
Yep. You got your first Schecter and you played the G chord.
Wasn't it where, okay, we had set the date And then Toby pushed it back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then
so it's set, now well, we're yeah, we set it up. So it's morning of September 11th. You know, it's yes. a time to leave. You know,
right.
we have determined yeah. the time to leave. It's for, you know, we haven't started that morning yet, but we've set yeah. the date and we're going to leave on September 11th in the year 2001 to start Emory, move to Seattle. We got a big gang of people: Matt, Toby, Devin, not Joey. Joel Green is now in the equation. Kevin Baldwin is riding with us, a friend who's on hard luck. And then Seth Studley's making the trip with us just for the cross-country trip.
Just for fun.
Just the trip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On a side note, I don't remember if I said told this story or not. So if I did, we can edit it or whatever. With y'all, the girl that I was dating, the reason why we stayed, she was actually... Remember, she lived in Greenville. No, let's see. She was from Greenville, so she was up, and so we decided to leave that Tuesday, and so I hung out with her, obviously, Monday night, and that's when I left her at her apartment over there. It was right across from Haywood Mall, and as I left, I was in my, you remember my green Mercury Sable?
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course.
And I walked, I said, okay, I'll talk to you soon, and I walked out to my car, turned on Furthest Things Forever, and I promise, by the time I got to the exit of her apartment complex, I was sobbing, and I just let the tears run down my face. I had both my hands on the steering wheel, and I just let that, and that song, what is the, I don't remember the name of the song, but the big line is, less of you is more than I can take, you know, like that. And I was screaming that with both hands on the wheel, just crying. And then I guess I drove to my dad's house, spent the night. And then the next day is when we were leaving.
I just remember it being, for me, it was pretty emotional because my mom was really, really emotional. Yeah. Like, she's just a super emotional person.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember it's one of those things where you, like, inside you're really excited to do something, but you know, if you show your excitement in a certain, you know what I mean? Like, with my mom yeah. there, it's a little weird. I wanted her to feel like I was sad, you know, for leaving. So I just remember getting there and we kind of getting ready to go. And then she's just like crying her eyes out, and we're just trying to get ready to go.
But I was so excited to go farther than I'd ever been. Like, up until that point, the farthest I'd ever been was Florida with you guys. You know what I mean? Like, that's it. Like, yeah, I never, I mean,
west at all.
Never been in a plane or anything. So I just thought, oh, I'm going to, like, I was so clueless. I just thought, what is it going to look like? It's going to be so different and all this. And it was, interestingly enough. I mean, it Seattle, surprisingly, was way different than Greer, South Carolina, and Rock Hill, South Carolina, and Charlotte. I mean, it was more and yep. better and a little intimidating and all that stuff. But I mean, all that stuff I didn't know, but I just thought, I'm going to see some sights. It was, you know, I will get into that later, but I just thought, you know, we'll see some landmarks and some cities, and we'd mapped out our way. I'm going to go through Chicago and all that stuff. You know, it seemed really exciting.
Okay. Hold on.
Guest, can you hear us, guest?
Are you talking to me?
Yes, I am. Toby and Devin, can you identify that voice?
Joel Green.
Joel Green.
Yes.
What's going on, buddy?
What's up, Joel?
Hey, Joel.
How are y'all?
Good, man.
Good, man. Real good.
That's great, man. Hang on. I'm getting some distortion on my right headphone here. Let me switch it out. Can you guys still hear me okay?
Yep. Sounds good.
Oh, that's much better. Yeah. I guess I need some new earbuds, man. These things are crapping out.
Well, good enough for now. If you can hear us, you're good. You can hear us fine, okay, right?
Yeah.
Sweet. Okay, so I didn't catch you up totally, but we're doing some podcasting now where we're trying to recount and tell the old stories before our brains fall apart. Sound good to you?
Yeah, it sounds good to me, man.
How's your brain,
by the way?
I feel
like we have so much knowledge to impart before our brains melt, you know?
How is your brain doing? Is it still remember stuff, or you forget everything already from back then?
I have no idea.
Well, we'll see.
I mean, you know.
So you got a 50-50 chance. Your brain might be great. You just don't know because you can't
exactly.
remember.
I mean, I don't think that's for me to decide. I think that's for every single person that, you know, has an interaction with me to decide, you know, as a collective.
Well, we're going to put you to the test now.
Okay. Hey, what? Before, is this? Are we live now? Or
we are live.
Recording for later.
Yeah, we're live.
Good. I'm glad I didn't turn the video on the end because I look like shite.
I don't have video on for you anyway, but that's okay. But yeah, all right. Sweet. So you're hearing the voice of Joel Green. Joel was the bass player in those days, but Joel didn't start even as the bass player. Joel, can you give us your recollection of how you got tangled up with the whole thing in the first place?
Oh, that's a good story.
Because yeah. We told it, but I think we told it wrong. So it's probably going to clarify details we said last couple weeks. So.
Well, you know, I mean, I knew you guys. I mean, we were roommates in college, and I feel weird because I feel like we've told the story a gajillion times, but I guess that's what you got to do. But anyway, I was planning on moving to Seattle anyway, and then
you were planning on moving to Seattle, how was that? How did that come about in your recollection in the first place? We were going anyway, and you just were going to also go, or what?
Yeah, I believe that was it. I mean, you guys were like my only friends in the world. And
moving to Seattle, so.
I mean, just imagine all your friends are moving across the country, and it's like, well, you either go with them or you, you know, take the risk of making new friends. And nobody wants to do that. So.
That's what I was trying to remember, though. Did we decide this, or you decide this before college ended, or was it when we had all moved back to Greer and you're like, you know what, they're going, I'm going to go? Because I remember you were in Greer because we all just went back to Greer and we started working and doing all that stuff. And I don't totally remember the exact details of.
That's the thing. I don't remember that either. Cause I want to say that like after we graduated, some of us stayed in Rock Hill for a while. Cause here's the thing. Like, okay. Remember we all worked on Shallow Hal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was after we graduated, right?
Yeah.
It was the summer after we graduated. So we would have had to.
It was after we graduated?
I don't know that it was.
It was at the end, and then. Yeah, we stayed a little bit. Yeah.
Okay. I guess you're right.
So you were planning to move to Seattle, but not to be in Emory?
Well, I mean, I guess not at that point because you guys didn't need me.
Right. Yeah, we had Joey.
To be in Emory. Yeah.
And then when he quit.
Because Joey was.
Do you remember how you found. I mean, how did it go down where we asked you to play? Do you remember that?
I don't think y'all asked me. I think I volunteered myself because I remember we were at Wild Wings in Greenville and Joey had written some kind of letter, you know, mm-hmm. like Dear John letter, like I'm out, guys. And all of y'all were freaking out, you know, and somebody was like, hey, well, let's go to Wild Wings tonight and try to figure this thing out. So we were sitting there and y'all were, you know, worried and stuff. And I was like, why don't I just play bass for a little while, you know, just casually said it. And then y'all kind of looked up and was like, okay. And that was it.
Well, that's pretty easy.
Yeah. That's probably.
And then I remember within a few days, like, I think you went with me, man. We went to, Vandenberg Music mm-hmm. and, traded what I had left of a PA in for that Schecter bass.
Oh, that's right.
That Robert Aleo.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Man.
And I wish I still had that thing. But I traded in for that. And I don't know where we got a bass amp. I don't remember that at all. Like, I don't remember what my first bass amp was.
No,
but,
I don't recall either.
We got something and, you know, put it in the trailer. And that was that.
Okay. Well, then we're caught up. We told the rest of the story. And now we are at September 11th, 2001. What time is it?
7-ish. 6 a.m.
6-ish, yeah.
And it was early.
Where are we?
Matt's
your house.
Matt's house.
Your parents' house.
Man, I just slept so poorly the night before, as you might
could have. Oh, yeah.
Golly, yeah. What a night.
I think we probably all did. I mean, you realize we were about to drive across the country, right? Like the next day.
Yeah,
you know what? I think anywhere. I must have stayed at your house that night, Matt. Mm-hmm. I must have stayed. And then Joel's parents came. Devin's parents came. Your parents were there. My parents did not come.
No. Your parents are the only ones that weren't there.
They did
right?
not show. Yeah. They did
no,
not.
No,
they didn't
Toby's
call.
Parents.
They didn't, there was no nice letters or anything with that. no going away from me. Just. But Kevin's family, I don't think they showed up. I mean, that was it, right? Like it was us four and Kevin.
And so.
And that was it.
And Seth
went just to go.
Yeah.
But yeah, he wasn't moving out there.
Yeah,
with
it wasn't
us
a permanent
time.
Move for him. Like the rest.
Yeah, he was just going to stay out there for, I don't know, a couple months or something, right?
Yep. So it's still
something like that.
It's still a normal America. It's 6:30 in the morning on the East Coast, and it's just a normal day, except for we got a lot going on. That's a big day for us at that.
It might have been the biggest pivotal point in all of our lives.
Right. So you could say at that point, and it would have been obviously true, the biggest day, biggest moment of my life, I have scheduled it, in fact, and planned it so that the day, the most important day to me, it'll be September 11th, 2001 will be that day.
Right.
Schedule the time about 6:15. You know, that
schedule the most important overshadow this awesome day.
And I'm looking forward to kind of basking in the day.
We probably even said, this will be a day we'll always remember.
Now, this is a day we're all going to remember.
I know.
There's guys.
We probably put our hands in a circle, you know, and did like the Woe Bundy thing, you know, like September. And it's funny, too, because, I mean, you know, that was a huge day for us, but then it you know, ended up being a huge day for a lot of other people, too.
Okay, well, let's get to that part. So we get there. I'll tell you how we got to what we did. We left South Carolina. We took Highway 26 north to I-40 in North Carolina, and you take I-40 for a while, and then we get up. See, anyway, so we get on I-40, and it's about breakfast time. I hadn't even had breakfast yet, but we wanted to get out of the state. So we got out of the state, and we found us a Cracker Barrel in Lenoir, North Carolina, or Asheville, or something like that. I don't remember exactly, but something like that, up on I-40, Cracker Barrel. Now, it's like 7:45, probably, or something like that. So we're celebrating, sitting down in our breakfast. I mean, good gosh, what's more exciting than that? You just left your state. You're sitting down with your buddies. You're at Cracker Barrel. And the whole entire future of your life lies just ahead of you.
So it had to be later, though. We must have driven. I think we drove on in to North Carolina. Because I think the towers didn't get hit until about 9 a.m.
Yeah, it might have been.
That's what I'm thinking.
By the time we got up and out.
Yeah, it was like 9, 9:30, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, let's stop and get a big breakfast. Don't know a thing that's happening. Like, the rest of the world is just in chaos. And when I think back, it almost like seems like
getting seated. It's already everybody else is already freaking out while we were being seated. We didn't have a cell phone and there's no TV.
I just even think about us in the car and then what the news immediately heard and everybody in the world is going crazy. And it's almost like we're just quietly just traveling down the road, not even aware.
Well, the crazy thing about it is, like, you know, imagine if we'd have had smartphones back then. Because I don't remember how long it was between the time that we left that I actually talked to my parents.
Oh,
like,
right.
We probably would have just turned around and came back home, you know? Like, I mean, if you think about it, like, your parents find out that, you know, this huge, incredible thing's happening. And they're blowing up your phone like, hey, you need to come back, you know?
Yeah.
And we may have.
Our parents. I know it couldn't have been too long after that.
I'm sure we called them from the payphone.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Well, I think too, even though we found out when we found out at the Cracker Barrel that this was happening, I don't think we understood the magnitude of it. And we just thought,
how did we find out? Tell them.
I've told this story over 100 billion times. But my recollection is, we get out, you know, we were like, we're big ballers now. We're getting we go to Cracker Barrel, the most normal thing we could ever do. We didn't try. Our first restaurant is not at all adventurous. It's just we'll let you know. We get out, we go in, and we had this waitress that just seems real country. And I think she might have brought out our drinks, or as we sat down, she's like, have y'all heard what happened? And we're like, No, I didn't. I just didn't. This whole life change. I wasn't even thinking, Harley. I'm remembering her say this stuff now, but like in the moment, I didn't even pay attention, Harley, because I'm like, who is this woman? What's she talking about? And she said, the way I remember it is, she said, tourists have attacked New York. And I was
I'm pretty sure that's the exact word she used. And with a thicker accent than you have at the moment.
Yeah. And I was like, what in the world? Tourists. What? And I think Matt might have been the first one. Was like, do you mean terrorists? And it's really crazy because I wasn't really familiar with the word terrorist even. It was nowhere near what the word, how popular the word is now. I mean, I know what a terrorist is, but that wasn't a word that was really used much even.
Well, hang on. Well, I don't think it was like that quick. I think she said tourists and then like went away.
Yeah.
Like, we were all confused.
About, yeah.
Like, and then she came back and she said it was organized by the son of Bin Laden. And then Seth is probably the only one of us that was watching the news, you know, at any point. He was like, I think she means Osama bin Laden. And I was clueless. I was like, who is that? Yeah, like,
who is that?
And as soon as she said that and Seth said that, then he said, she must mean terrorists. And then I was like, okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Once we heard his name, it's like, well, that, what is that?
The only thing we would have maybe known at that time about terrorists, I think I remember the name Osama bin Laden had come up in the news, whatever, maybe previously a little bit, and it was Saddam Hussein in the 90s. Yes,
Saddam Hussein.
And so that whole war, the Desert Storm and all that stuff, and it kind of went into Osama bin Laden. So I think we at least heard a little bit, but the word terrorist wasn't really a common use at that point. Yeah. So again, she didn't even really know the word.
Yeah. It wasn't clear to us that it was a big deal or, you know, like, it was still for plane one and everything. So it was like, is it an accident? Like a plane hit the thing. Is that like just a small plane? Maybe it was a Cessna? No, what happened? It was like you don't have the information. Yeah. You can't look it up.
You don't have an iPhone.
Yeah. It was like,
if that happened right now, imagine the pictures and everything that we would have seen in that moment. Yeah. I mean,
was one of the biggest events that actually did have some crazy footage that did get shared, because there was YouTube and stuff. There was internet. Right. And it did get shared more and for the first time. It probably would have been
like an Amber Alert or something. For sure.
I'm sure, yeah.
Then we're sitting there with that, and we don't really understand the magnitude of it. I don't... what happens next? We sit there through the whole plane one and two, and I mean, we still didn't get to a TV or see anything. And the craziest thing that I recall about it, retrospectively, is we finished our meal and said, okay, all right,
keep on trucking,
you know. That was weird. Okay, back to normal life of driving in a car. I mean, it was radio, but there wasn't any, they would talk on the radio about it some, so we started to get the details in the car, but we weren't even all together in the car, so we would just flip the radio and you'd kind of hear it. And I remember when we got to Indiana, we stayed at I remember just getting fuel and walking in the gas station to pay, because you had to pay, and we paid cash, and you go in the gas station, the guy has a little TV with the rabbit ears on it, in the gas station, you can see what's going on, like, for 5 minutes while you're getting gas, like, whoa, you know? And then for the next 7 days, just missed it.
I could have swore we went to, like, a Walmart or a Target at some point, right?
Yeah, I think we went to Walmart in Tennessee.
I think that's where it was all the, you know, like, electronics section. They were showing all that stuff.
Yeah, it's like a movie. Yeah, like, I just had to go to Walmart and see all the 30 TVs with it on, just to see what was going on. But how long are we gonna stay? 5 minutes? I mean, 20 minutes? Right. And then we gotta go.
I don't think that I don't remember seeing it until like 3 days after it happened. I think we were, Devin's right, we were at some kind of grocery store or something, and they had a big TV up, because I remember thinking, like, you know, not that'd be good to see, and like it's a good thing, but I would like to see the footage. And I remember it taking like a day or two, or maybe three, before we actually saw anything on TV.
But we were sufficiently scared because we were on our way to Chicago, and at that point, it was like, okay, well, they bombed New York.
Don't go to big
cities.
We
can't go to Chicago tomorrow because they're probably is next. That's what it seemed, and probably shouldn't go to Seattle at all, because they're going to get all these cities. It's like that. That's kind of what, you know, I'm sure we called back on payphones and started thinking about things like, can we even drive to Chicago? Is that even safe? You know,
all right.
Do y'all recall thinking maybe we should not keep going? I don't recall actually.
I thought we had a conversation, like a real conversation, like, hey, listen, this is crazy, because at the time people were saying it, you know, it's like whatever the highest threat level is. And there's going to be another attack. This wasn't. And then, you know, because they'd already realized that the one had been foiled. It went down in Pennsylvania instead of, you know, or whatever. Yep. And then one kind of hit the White House or Pentagon. Something. And people still, the Pentagon, rather.
Yeah.
And so I remember us maybe just, but I think, I still think that we just thought if we turn around, we won't leave again or something. Because I don't see how we would have. It would, because it was a next, I mean, it was crazy few months there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just was.
I remember having a conversation with my mom that later that day, or maybe the second day or something. And I must've been a payphone. And I mean, I think everybody's parents has, to some degree, said, you know, maybe you guys should just come back home and wait it out and see what's going to happen. And I remember saying, I think, to my mom, like, well, mom, I mean, it's not like going back home is any safer than us just driving. You know what I mean? I remember having a conversation with my mom about, like, well, if we go home, it's not like we're any safer than we are just going down the road. You know, and I think I even told her, well, we're not going to go anywhere that we think is going to be threatened or something like that. But I remember having a conversation about like, what should we do? And then I think we discussed it, you know, or whatever.
Interestingly, would you not say this? I don't think it ruined our day.
Yeah, probably not.
Think about that.
I don't think so.
I mean,
so.
I didn't get it. Yeah. I mean, obviously at the time I didn't understand it or its magnitude, of course, but it was still a really fun day, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Like truth of it is that happened.
All the way to that Meijer or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, that week was the most adventure, best time I've ever had. Like, I mean, it felt like that the week, and for everybody else, it was like the darkest week in the country's history. I've always felt weird about that, but it was like the best week of my life. Most exciting.
It was awesome.
I mean, there's probably some old dude out there that's like, you know, back when Pearl Harbor got bombed, who was like, he went on the picnic with his lady friend and, you know, asked her to marry him and everything. And he's like, that was the best day of my life. And then the country's like, that day sucked. You know?
I mean, that's the thing is like, you're right. At the moment where we were going to, you know, Yellowstone Park and, you know, the Badlands and seeing Mount Rushmore for the first time, all this unbelievable stuff. There's these people who are being rushed to New York to save people's lives that are dying. Yeah. And we are literally just, I mean, we were trying to some degree block it out. Like, I mean, not like we didn't care, but we didn't really know the magnitude. So we're like, well, what are we going to do? Let's just enjoy ourselves and then we'll figure it out later. But I mean, and by the time we got to Seattle, we didn't feel threatened or anything like that, I don't think. But
yeah, it was ominous for months in a weird way. Like, you could feel the country being different for months. But I mean, that trip that week, I mean, we just went and did. And I think it's crazy we spent 7 days driving. You can do that drive in 3 days if you're in a hurry, but we were certainly not in a hurry. And that's what I think is the coolest part about it is the next few years of Emory are the nicest, no pace, just whatever. If you think about it now, from where we are in life, starting that week is like, you just do what you feel like when you feel like it. There ain't no rush. You got nowhere to go. Nobody waiting on you when you get there. Are you having a good time? Good. That's when that started right then. And it was just whatever. As long as you got food, you're good. Starting right then. What a time that was. We'll take 7 days. Man. We'll just go to park. We'll just do whatever we feel like. And when we get there, we'll figure that out. So 7 day trip out. What did we do? We went to Indianapolis first night.
Yeah.
Chicago, we went to the second day.
Yeah.
Well, we went it was something weird about the downtown, though. We didn't let you go downtown.
No. I thought we did go downtown.
We went to.
We kind of went around it.
Because wherever we went, it was like dead. Like nobody was anywhere. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like all the businesses were closed. No airplanes were flying. There's no traffic anywhere. And we're just like a bunch of idiots in this caravan driving through, you know.
I'm pretty sure we went Illinois down somewhere. Lake. I'm pretty sure we went down Lakeshore Drive, which kind of goes, you know, around the lake edge, the edge of the city. But there were streets inside the city that were blocked off. Like I remember you couldn't go down most of the streets.
Yeah.
But you could go kind of around it. I remember that.
They had like one way, but we went to some place we thought was like a famous hot dog place, but it had a unbelievably narrow parking lot. Mm-hmm. We had that giant trailer attached to Matt's toe. And I remember us having to back it out. And I was like, this is crazy. Scary. Like we are somewhere around Chicago, and we are backing out of the smallest, tiniest little parking lot. Matt's backing it out into the street, and little did I know that'd be like, you know, that's one of the biggest parts of my life.
Yeah, that's all you've been doing.
Doing that exact thing from that point.
We would do that 1,000 more times.
Yes.
And one thing we have a
trailer in Yale.
and block one traffic. Thing we like we had some we kind of authority or something.
Yeah.
Well, one thing we haven't talked about yet, too, in traveling with this rig is that Matt was the only one that could drive this Yukon and trailer. Now, we did have three cars and it was a few guys riding there, but Matt, it was his vehicle. So that was part of it. It was like, well, we don't want to crash and it be, you know, somebody else. But also, this 24 foot trailer. Would sway unbelievably. So we didn't have a big enough vehicle to pull it properly. So as soon as like you'd get just a little bit off or the wind or something like that, I mean, this thing would go into like
I forgot about 6 feet that.
Either both ways.
Just going back and forth, back and forth.
Oh my gosh, my damn mind. Yeah. It was, yeah, nerves of steel Matt for some of those like, first couple days.
Kind of figured out the best way to like balance it out and like offset it.
Oh,
and
yeah, I would have to, you have a technique to offset the overcorrection. Oh my, yeah, you'd have to steer into it because it would start to, the car was powerful enough to do the towing part, but it didn't weigh. It was the trailer was so heavy that it would get its own momentum.
And all our gear was in the back.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. I was about to say, in hindsight, we should have loaded it, you know, with the gear in front of the axle. I think that would have helped.
It wasn't our design,
a good bit.
We had a living room up front that we needed. So
The living room was nice.
The living room of the trailer was in the front. What are you talking about gear?
And Parsival on here said calls it the Jimmies.
Yes, so the Jimmies.
You know, he calls it the Jimmies as well. That's what we always called it.
That's what we called it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we slapped in that trailer. We built bunks. So the trailer's 24 feet long by 8 feet wide. It had a side door up the front. And so the first 6 feet or so had a countertop, a linoleum floor, and a couch and a microwave. Like a lounge. Then
and
there's
it
a
also
wall.
Had a toilet room in it, right?
Oh, yeah. And then right behind that was a small toilet that drained
that
us
just
down to the
drained
street.
Drained out to the street,
And then we had bunks down one side and gear parallel to the bunks in the back. And you had to be let kind of like let in and out of the back of the trailer. And it was just a tomb.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Or you had to crawl across all the beds to get to your bed. It's really funny design the way it was. And the best thing in the world, though, is that I just remembered, man, when we went to sleep, it was the darkest.
Awesome.
There was no light that could enter the trailer. And it was just pitch black. It just like you could sleep forever.
It was sealed.
It was like a tomb.
Yeah, it was definitely a tomb. And so, you know, what's crazy about here is we got a 7-day trip till we get to Seattle. And we can talk more about the trip, whatever y'all want. But what's a really funny fact is when we get to Seattle, we won't be moving directly out of that trailer. I don't know if we know that at the time, but we would be those beds and that trailer for that trip. I mean, I think that winds up lasting 20 or 30 days, right?
Yeah.
Before
we lived in a campsite in Federal Way for a
while.
While
we were looking for apartments.
Right.
And stuff.
So when we eventually get to Seattle, we discover quickly, we ain't got nowhere to go. So we drove south to a state park.
But
and
wasn't
there.
That just so awesome?
Yes. Is there anything else you want to say about the driving
think
out?
Think about it now. Yeah. Oh, anyway. Yeah, but now correct me if I'm wrong on this, but this might have been a different trip and maybe I'm thinking of it. But there was a time where we stopped. I can't remember if we couldn't find a campsite or if we were in the middle of somewhere and we just couldn't find something. So we just basically pulled over to the side of the road. And Seth decided to sleep on top.
Yeah, that
was that
on the
this
way
trip?
Out. Yep.
Okay.
We were in a national park.
That was in Yellowstone.
I thought. Yeah, it was in Yellowstone, but we didn't find a campground.
Yeah,
or we weren't. In a
campground. Oh yeah, we parked in the parking lot of like the store. Or
that's
the,
a different day. But we stopped on a mountain road and just pulled over.
Yeah, we stopped on a mountain road.
We just pulled over.
Yes.
In Montana or
and
Wyoming.
Seth said, "Hey, I'm sleeping on top tonight. I want to look at the stars. It'll be awesome." Yeah.
He took
so
his
he
mattress.
Had one of those sleep
he put on
masks.
Top of the trailer.
He put his mattress on top of the trailer. He had a sleep mask, and he slept there. It was nice. It was cool and whatever. The next morning, a cop pulls up.
Park ranger
behind us. Park ranger pulls up. I can't remember if I imagine it because of what Seth told me. Or if we actually saw it, but somehow or another, we saw Seth. The guy pulls up, and Seth just sits straight up in bed with a sleep mask on top of our thing, looking. And the park ranger just sees him on top, and he's like, "You guys can't stay here." And we're all—I don't remember if he banged on the door.
No,
I can't remember
the
details. The
guy comes up there, and is like, "Hey, you guys can't stay here." And then he looks up. And Seth sits upright with a sleep mask on, but Seth forgot the sleep mask was on, so he's like looking around. Seth thinks it's dark. He's looking left or right. So who said that? He's sitting up on a racing trailer pulled off on the side of the road, not in a parking spot or a camping ground. It's just on the side of the road. The guy sits up, he's wearing a sleep mask, looks around, can't figure out where he is with a mattress on top of a racing trailer. Park ranger, y'all got to go.
Oh, man, that was so funny.
Oh, man. Oh, and then I believe it was the first time all this 9/11 stuff had happened, but, you know, we were excited and we went through the Badlands and went to Mount Rushmore.
Yep.
And if I'm not mistaken, it was completely covered in like fog or mist or clouds.
Yep.
That was the first time we didn't get to actually see it.
Drove there.
Yeah, it was completely drove out of the way, invisible.
Walked all the way.
Drove up there, paid in, and looked at the fees.
Yeah, it was just great. Yeah. We even stuck around for a while to see if it would move, but it never did. It
did not move at all.
I think the same thing happened to us years later when we got to San Francisco. Like, I was all excited about seeing
the
Bay Bridge or whatever, and it was I still to this day have not seen that bridge, even though I've ridden across it, you know. But it's completely invisible.
So we had walkie talkies. We were in the three cars, and we had walkie talkies.
That's right,
if you recall.
That's right. I forgot about the walkie talkies.
You know, you want to stop up here and tell a funny joke? You know, got an idea for a song?
I just remember taking so many pictures with like a disposable camera. Yeah. I mean, you just pull over and every cool thing you saw, you're like, hey, let's pull over. Let's take a cool picture here. I remember just like, I was like floored. Like Yellowstone was amazing. The Badlands were really cool. All this stuff. And we got to, was it Bighorn Mountain?
Mm-hmm. Bighorn Mountains, yeah.
Montana. Anyway, that was pretty far out there. And I remember like, you know, like Toby said, you know, before this, like you have no idea. Like the world is so big, you have literally no idea. And you're just like, everything is just like, oh my gosh, it's unbelievable.
I know.
And now after all these years, it's like, you know, you don't even explore a city when you go on tour at all. You know what I mean? Like you just, it's just so different. Everything seems so different. Yeah. But back then I remember going through the mountains and we came up on this mountain lake. And back then we would swim in anything. We would jump in water anywhere. We would stop and just swim. And I remember seeing this mountain lake and we were just like, oh my gosh, this is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. I can't, it was just, it blew my mind. And I still have like pictures from that. And, it's just, I remember stopping and swimming in different places and just, man, it was just, it's such a different feeling now. You know what I mean? Like I'm at the point in my life now to where I want to show my kids that stuff. You know what I mean?
It's like you've got a real grip on the United States now, you know, like it seems like a small neighborhood compared to what it used to.
Yeah, exactly. Back then it was like infinite. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You can never see it. So I don't know. I just remember that feeling of just being astonished, like constantly.
Yeah. To see the West for the first time is mind blowing for sure. If you hadn't been there and, you know, keep in mind, we got hundreds of dollars and we're going to Seattle and we ain't got no plan.
Yeah.
Like we didn't have anywhere to go. We didn't know anybody and none of us ever been there. Here we go.
All right.
It should work out.
Do y'all remember we got to Bellevue and we thought that was Seattle?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So to get into that, I remember just driving through Western Washington or Eastern Washington and it's all hot and deserty and we drive up, we've done all the mountains and passes, so we're good for that point. I remember driving up. This has been a week. We've been driving, traveling, camping, swimming, everything. Get up and we climb up the Snoqualmie Pass and get up and as soon as we got to the peak of it and turned down, it's foggy and rainy and you know, remember it was like we're in the rainforest all of a sudden. Yeah. And this is September still, so it was but it was like a completely the climate changed just like that as soon as you go over that pass. Remember that?
Yeah.
And then we're 40 miles from Seattle at that point, and you're going, oh my gosh. And you go over this giant mountain after you've done the whole country. It's about one of the biggest, steepest passes there is on the drive. And you start coming back down it, and you're only 40 miles from the city, and you're in the middle of the wilderness. There's snow. I mean, in September and August, there's snow. In July, right. There's snow on the peaks out there, and you're just coming down through this and going, wait, we're almost there? Like, it seems like you're so far from anything. You seem like you're in the middle of the West, and we're driving down. And then I remember thinking how terrified we were just to drive in a city. Like, I remember thinking, we were saying, well, we can't just drive into the city. What are we going to do? Where are we going? Where are we going? We didn't know. It was like, we just had to find an RV park in Seattle. Like there was one.
I think
something.
We just wanted to see the city or just, you know, just kind of go experience it a little bit. And 90 goes straight into Bellevue, right?
But we're nervous about going to Seattle. Right. So I'm thinking, look, I cannot take this trailer. We cannot run up into some exit and it spits us out downtown because we'll get killed. I don't know what will happen. We cannot take this trailer into the city. Nobody's prepared for that. So we got to be careful to take an earlier exit, you know, where there's somewhere to park if we get off so we can make a plan. Because we had to make the plan, we all had to get out and talk and make a plan.
So now correct me if I'm wrong, but what I remember is pulling up and we are getting close to the city, and we can see, you know, some buildings. We can see
We see a skyline. Like, we go, okay, well, there's the Seattle skyline. And y'all see the Space Needle. Like, okay, and everybody's like, I don't see it yet, but let's pull over.
I don't see it yet. But I remember pulling over. I think we parked on the road. There was like street parking in front of a Safeway.
Mm-hmm, Safeway, yeah.
Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah, sounds
and
right.
And we went. I think we even went in.
Mm-hmm.
And said maybe even said something to somebody.
Yeah, it feels like Dumb and Dumber
about it. They're like, "Oh, Seattle. This is Bellevue."
Yeah, they're like Seattle, huh? So where's the Space Needle? Now, we asked somebody.
Think someone corrected us and said,
"We thought we had made it, and we still didn't.
We had not crossed somebody, Lake Washington yet."
Somebody in a Safeway in Bellevue corrected us on that.
I remember it was some dude, like some professional-looking guy, and he was like, "I think he was laughing at us, not." Not like in a making fun way, but I think he was just like, what are you people?
What you know what I'm saying? We just were at that. We're
six dirty dudes with weird accents. And we're like, hey, man, where are we? You know, and he's like, what? Like I remember him coming over to the to UConn and just kind of looked in. I was like, what are y'all doing, man? Like, you know, like couldn't believe it. You know,
because it's not as if it was like, oh, those are dudes in a small band. It wasn't.
Right.
It wasn't as if we were band dudes at the time. We were not.
No, yeah.
Like it didn't look like guys in a band. Just like weird people.
Yeah. We looked like rednecks who had a go-kart trailer.
Yeah, I know. It wasn't like, oh, I'm sure they're in a band or something. Not that. Not that.
That's funny.
And so then it's like, okay, well, where do you want to go? It is like Dumb and Dumber. It's like when they got to Aspen. It's like, okay, well, here we are.
Now what? Yeah.
So we were looking for an RV park, but turns out there's not a whole bunch of them anywhere near Seattle. So we wound up driving to a state park that was closer to Tacoma, you know, 40 miles south of Seattle or so, 30 miles south of Seattle, something like that. So we drove all the way down there. It's called Dash Point State Park, and they had some open spots. So we went and got a campsite there. And said, well, we'll figure out how to get an apartment, or maybe we'll get some jobs. I don't know. We'll figure it out from here. So I went down to Dash Point State Park, which probably costs $30 a day to stay or something like that.
Yeah.
And there we are. We have arrived in Seattle. Here we go. Now, I think we wind up probably living at that state park for how long do you think that was? A couple of weeks? A week?
Yeah, I was thinking about 2 weeks, I think. Well, the other thing, too, is we were trying to get an apartment in Seattle. We weren't thinking about living in the suburbs or the surrounding cities.
We had no idea.
And we didn't even think about it would be more expensive or whatever, but obviously the closer you are to Seattle or in Seattle is going to be way more expensive, and then the better parts to live are more expensive. So
then we had the three cars in the trailer, and we would cook out with a campfire, cook supper on it, and live like hobos in the state
park. Every day.
Yeah. We didn't have any money. We needed to try to get an apartment, we figured. Right. So we would then take all the people, unhook the trailer, and put everybody in the Yukon, including in the back. So there's six of us. It only had, you know, five seats, somebody in the back. And we would just drive around the city and go to look at what is Fremont? What is Linwood? What is Renton? What is Bellevue like? Can we live in the city? And we would just drive around to neighborhoods and look at them and then look for apartments and then go to the leasing office and ask how much and talk to people and say, could we get an apartment? Yeah. How much would it be? I mean, that's all just stuff like that. Looked at rental houses. I don't know. From the classifieds.
It's funny in retrospect, too, because like Renton isn't like the best place. Like, it's not even, but Linwood or, you know, Shoreline or something would have been prettier and all that stuff. It's funny that we like, and I think back to like, if we wouldn't have moved to Renton, it would have changed our entire trajectory of our career too. Like picking Renton helped us. First of all, you go, oh, well, you're closer to Tacoma where the shows were happening, you know? And like, I bet if we were in Linwood, we might've gone, I don't know, mate, let's just try and focus on shows up here in University District only or something, you know?
We never would have met Josh.
Yeah.
So we're almost to that point.
We probably wouldn't have met Josh.
So we were looking at apartments and regions of the city trying to make a home and jobs. So we'd just ride around and say, you got a job, you got apartment, job, apartment, us, you, me, apartment, job, can we got it? We're here. So maybe you should give us a job.
Give it to me.
Can have that apartment. We tried apartments that got declined or applied for houses and didn't get them. I mean, all that stuff. So like, back to the state park tonight. But it wasn't a bummer. It was like, who cares?
No,
it didn't matter at all. We could have stayed there forever. I wouldn't have cared.
I mean, why would you ever be mad? You're just going back. I mean, I understand we wanted to get started and all that stuff, but I'm saying looking back, it's like you're going back to this cool camp out situation with your best friends, hanging out, eating food, doing whatever right. you want.
Yeah, but eating food like doesn't cost much Nally's money. Chili, but yeah,
I know, but it was awesome.
Oh God, I forgot about a can of Nally's chili. That's my favorite chili of all time.
They and still the make vegetarian that? Version.
Oh, the vegetarian was unbelievable.
Yeah, that was the best one.
Yeah, but it's Frank's
hot sauce in it.
Oh my God.
Yeah, a little bit of sour cream. Holy moly.
But yeah, so okay, who can remember? I know you guys remember this stuff. I always forget these little details. But what was the name of the apartment that we eventually found?
Yeah, I think it's Eagle's Point or Eagle.
Eagle Point. Eagle Point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
remember what the rent was?
Eagle Point.
I want to say it was like $665
like
or something.
It was like
$700. It was $900.
Yeah. Wow. Three-bedroom apartment was like $700, $800, $900.
I still think I remember, it was like in the 700s.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, you're probably right. I remember being in the office. I think it was probably me and Matt, because I'm the nice guy and Matt's the business guy. So I think we were the duo at the time. And I remember this girl named Lynn, who we eventually became friends with.
That's right.
She worked there. So that was the whole process of that. And we met her and her friends and all that stuff later, some of the first people we hung out with. So that was the one that gave us a chance.
Yeah.
The only apartment that gave us a chance.
Smiled at her enough to let us rent one of the apartments finally. And so that cemented where we were going to live. So Renton, Washington is the new home of Emory. And it's now the end of September 2001. Don't have any money, but we do have a place to live. We paid first and last, I suppose. And we've got an apartment, which is pretty cool. Three bedroom.
Yeah, I think we picked that one because it was the cheapest, probably too. Sure. Like the other ones, there was probably not. I think we looked at nicer ones or cooler ones, but they wanted like a bigger deposit, or they wanted, you know, we didn't have enough credit or whatever it was. So I think that's why we ended up there. That was probably one of the cheapest ones, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe so.
So we're not into like making music and all that kind of stuff yet. What do we need next? I suppose jobs.
Yeah, jobs.
So
who was the first person to get a job?
Does I was the first that? Person to get a job at Guitar Center.
At Guitar Center? Yep.
So that I went was straight the first to Guitar job. Center. Yeah. I mean, I don't know exactly the chronology, but Joel came after me to that, and I don't recall exactly. But South Center Mall is right down the street. There's a Guitar Center. I never had been to one of those before or seen one or knew what it was. Yeah. It was music store to me. And so I went to that music store, and they needed somebody in keyboards software. And he just asked me a bunch of questions. I knew the answers, and they hired me. So, you know, they took me in the manager's office and kind of quizzed me, and I seemed to have the grip. And so I got hired on there for $7 an hour.
yeah.
It was cool.
And then
we got Joel on there shortly. Joel got on in accessories right after that. What do you remember about that, Joel, getting on there?
I had to actually scam my way into working there. Y'all remember Preston, the assistant manager that used to work there?
Yeah.
So after Matt got hired, I put in an application, and then I think like I called up there like 2 days later. And you guys remember when we first got there, we didn't know you had to dial area codes to make a phone call. How frustrating that was. Like we were like, why? You know, we dial a number and it would just not do anything. We're like, why is this not calling? And then somebody told us like, oh, you got to dial the area code. So I finally got through to Guitar Center. Preston answered. He was like, hey, this is Preston, man. What's up? I was like, yeah, dude, somebody there called me about a job interview, and I was just calling back to schedule. And he was like, oh, yeah. And he was like, what's your name again? And I told him, he was like, yeah, well, can you come in tomorrow at 2? And I said, sure.
Get the application, and I like it.
So I went in and met with him, and then I guess I met with Phil.
But what did they like, say? Well, you know what? Joel, you seem like a great candidate. For the life of me, we've misplaced your application. You're going to have to fill it out again.
I just played dumb. I was like, I don't know. Whatever you guys need me to do, man. That's
funny. Yeah, I remember you guys got that job. I got a job at Aqua Massage in the mall.
Now what? So, pray tell.
If anybody knows, I have no idea why. I don't even remember all the places I applied. I guess I just applied anywhere and everywhere I thought maybe. And that was one that was easy. I think that was one that was like I walked up and said, hey, I need, you know, whatever. And he was like, yeah. I mean, I think it was like right away. It's basically like, oh, yeah, we need somebody. So, you know, I don't know if everybody on Twitch or whatever knows about those, but I guess they've kind of gone out now since it probably wasn't the best thing. But there's like a bed.
They were awesome. You know, they have one of those beds at the gym where I'm at. I mean, they still exist.
Oh, yeah. I guess they're more specialty now, like in certain places. But yeah, the top came down. They have like a liner around it. And then you just, there's a remote that controls the you know, how hard and fast the massage is.
And it's a kiosk in the mall.
It's a kiosk. So it's not even like its own store where it's like private. Your head's hanging out the side and there's people walking by.
And you are the one working there.
I was working there. Yeah. And the guy, he was a dummy. I mean, he was just like, he's like, now when people come up, you need to put on this like real warm massage, you know, those things that you put on people's necks, you know, like massage or not massage, but like relaxing and stuff. He's like, yeah, heat it up in the microwave, put it on their shoulders if they want a massage. I'm like, I'm not doing that. And I just can't. This is just stupid. So anyway, I worked there for a little while. But it was cool because I got a free massage every day.
Every day
that
you
was,
got one.
That was tight.
They were nice, too. I remember you hooked me up one time. It felt good.
Yeah, I did. And then, Toby, where was your first job? I can't remember your first one.
The antique mall.
Antique mall. This is a sitcom. Yeah. Your job is a sitcom, 100%.
It was two older ladies that owned an antique mall, and they were in competition with, because I don't know if y'all remember, that down older downtown Renton used to be, it was like a whole strip of malls. Yep. And they're all together, which actually benefited them, but they all hated each other. So I talked to sometimes, you know, some of the other antique mall owners, and they'd say mean stuff about the ladies that I worked for and stuff. But
so it was two old ladies and then a 25-year-old Toby or something in there, just the attendant.
So what did you do, man? Were you just pretty much the muscle? Like you just did all the heavy lifting? Or
Pretty quickly, they just had me start opening for them, you know, even though I think opening, they didn't open till like 10 or something. I worked like 10 to 4, I forget, something like, it was, you know, part-time basically. And then Saturday mornings, they wanted me there real, you know, earlier, like 7 or 8. But I would just, any heavy lifting is what they needed me mostly for, you know what I mean? Like if there was something, because I mean, they were both 60s or 70s back then. And, late 50s,
still alive.
I can't be. And I've tried to remember their names. What, Beverly? Beverly was this. Beverly. I mean, it was like it was almost like what's the Blanche from Golden Girls? She had her hair was bright red and done up, and she had just her jewelry and all this. And she would just tell me stories about when she was younger and men, you know. And she wouldn't get too racy, but she would just, you know, this stuff went down. But, they just had me do that, you know, and it was so boring. Oftentimes, nobody would come in for like an hour, and I would just sit on their computer and play that snake game. You remember that one where it just goes around and you just try to avoid the, or what's the one where you, is it called bomb? You know, where you hit the squares. Minesweeper. Yeah.
Minesweeper. Yeah.
I played Minesweeper. Unbelievable mouse. Didn't have a cell phone whatsoever.
You worked there for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. I ended up working there for a long time. And then, I don't know. I mean, we're getting into it now, but yeah.
So now we got a job. Right. Now we got an apartment. And so we will leave this week with this, and we'll start back in next week when Emery starts making music for real. So we need a place to practice, and we'll need some music. So, but this is now October, and the J-Man enters next week too. So, or they were about to that point. So it's October 2001. We've got jobs. We're in Renton, Washington. We hadn't done any music or played any shows or met any bands or even gone to a show or anything remotely associated with music yet. But we live on the West Coast. We made it. We did it.
Yeah.
Which is pretty surreal at that time. We did it. We still were payphoning girlfriends and stuff like that, you know, like using payphones still to call with quarters for the long distance and stuff like that.
Like calling cards or collect calls or something like that.
Yep, that's right. And we could walk down to the payphone or store, get pizza there, and we didn't know a soul. But it wasn't sad. It was pretty exciting, I think.
Pretty awesome, actually.
Yeah, it was great.
And then our first social connection, of course, would be the first social connection we would make would turn out to be the ultimate one, the J-Man.
Yeah.
J-Man.
The most ultimate social connection you could ever make, we'd make right away.
Yeah. Oh, man. I can't wait to talk about that next week.
Y'all ever think, like, not to change the subject, but all those, you know, integral people in our story, like that the Cracker Barrel waitress, you know, and all the other people, like, what their path was like after we met them, you know what I'm saying? Like, where they went in their life and stuff. That would be an interesting thing to try and figure out.
I think I don't want to know what happened to the Cracker Barrel waitress.
I don't want to chase that one down.
Just seems like I just wouldn't. It wouldn't make me feel better.
Let's not. Let's leave that stone.
I feel good about hearing her story.
Yeah,
you never know. That I think she might have gone on to do amazing things.
She may have. she may have.
We would never know.
She still hates those. that Osama bin Laden is an asshole. But his son is a motherfucker.
The son has been awesome.
He's
the best.
Say what you will about Osama. I'm not saying I'm on his side or anything. His son
is a real piece. Yeah. Yeah.
Real jerk.
Oh, man. All right. Jerk. Well, Joel, thanks for coming on tonight, man. We appreciate you being here.
Yeah, man. My pleasure. I appreciate you guys hitting me up earlier. It's been fun.
Joel, I'm just right up the road now. I moved to Charlotte, North Carolina.
Oh, you did?
I moved this week.
Guys, we missed an important story. We're going to have to tag one on here. Joel.
I think I know what you're talking about.
When you moved to Seattle to play bass in Emory, if you'll recall, I don't know if you recall this or not, but you were already in a band.
You were in a band.
You were already a musician in a band, and you left that part of the story. Yeah. That's what I wanted to get from you.
Oh, yeah. Well, I did. Horrible thing, and I left.
So he decides in August to roll with us in September. Go ahead.
Well, I think I'd already made my mind up earlier than August, but as young men do sometimes, you know, we don't might not be the most upfront and honest about our decisions.
And by young, you mean 26, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I mean, it's still better than 44, right?
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, true.
But anyway, so I left them hanging, dude. I just split without saying anything to anybody.
But okay, now you said we were your best friends, but the people you were in a band with are also they were the people you were in a band with. Like they were also some of your best friends. Like you had more friends than us three.
Yeah,
and you were in a band with many of them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So,
but I mean, you know how it is.
Did it go down
though? I mean, you know how it is. You look at, you know, what's happening, like the way things are going. I remember Phil was like talking about going away to school, you know, like in a way that made me believe that he was going to move away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then Bo had something else going on, you know.
Yeah.
So I was just like, you know, I just kind of read the writing on the wall and I was like, this thing is not going to really go the distance, you know.
Mm,
so, yeah. But rather than addressing that head on, like a nice person does.
But it wasn't like you just didn't show up to practice to quit the band.
I mean, we didn't have anything scheduled.
Okay,
but I remember two weeks
or the week before we left. So this would have been the last week of August or first week of September. The last thing we did was go to one of your band's shows in Rock Hill. It was like 2 weeks before we left. You hadn't told them yet that you were leaving. And you did the show that would be your final show, but they didn't know that. Nor did they know their best friend was about to move to the West Coast.
Yeah.
I remember that show very well.
I thought you told everybody. I feel like you told Phil and Bo pretty quickly, but Ashley, you didn't say stuff to for like a week or so, right?
No, way longer. You didn't talk. So you never talked to Ashley Cook about it, did you?
Mm-mm.
Oh, God.
You just left town.
Yeah, I just split.
And you don't have a cell phone. And you don't live in South Carolina anymore. And the lead singer of your band doesn't know that you don't live in his state anymore.
There was
correct?
Yeah. I remember I called him from the road at a time that I knew he was not going to be at home, you know, which is, I know that's a shitty move, but you know, so, I was like, okay, he's probably going to be at work. And, anyway, I was like, well, if he answers, I'm just going to hang up and I'll try again later, you know? So, but he didn't, and I got his answer machine, you know? And I was like, don't know how to tell you this, man, but I'm, you know, en route to Seattle with the dudes, were we even called Emory at that point?
Yeah.
So, I was like, I'm sorry, man. You know, I think I left some kind of half-ass apology on this answer machine. But the cool thing was, well, it's not cool, but I knew, I was like, we don't have any way for him to like call me back. But you know what I'm saying? Like, none of, like we no did not way. Have a phone number.
No home phone, no cell phone, nothing.
No home phone, didn't no cell phone, nothing.
That's right.
Yeah. So I was like, I'm off the hook, man. Like, for real.
What's he going to do, come to Seattle?
So I was like, you know, as soon as I hung up the phone, I had this like just relief feeling, you know, like I just completely screwed over one of my best friends. But, you know, I guess I was looking at the bigger picture and I was like, you know, at some point it'll be cool. You know, at some point in the future. And it was, you know, yeah. He called me. He got our number. He called us on the cell phone.
Months. This is months later before you ever talked, though, right?
It was way after that because we were at we were already in Maple Valley at that point. So, yeah, it was a long time. Yeah, I guess we had gotten that phone number. I guess he like had, you know, called my parents, whatever. And they gave him our new number, and he called me. Because I remember, I think it was Matt. He was handing me the phone. I was like, "Who is it?" And I looked, and it was a 704 area code, and I was like,
uh-oh. I kind of remember that too. I remember you getting that phone call. That's funny.
Yeah, because I think Matt had like this, like half smile on his face. Yeah, like, yeah, you know, okay, he's about to get in trouble. But yeah, I mean, he fussed at me for a while, and you know, we reestablished a connection, and he forgave me, and it's, you know, it's all better now.
That is good. That is
a great story.
Yeah, I like that.
But yeah, I mean, I guess in nowadays, the kids are calling it ghosting. That's pretty much what I did.
Yeah,
that's the original ghosting.
Irish goodbye, ghosting, something like that.
Exactly.
Good.
Yeah. Well, Joel, thank you for coming on tonight, and thanks for you know, being
course,
a part
man.
Of
thank
all,
y'all
of that
for
and all that would
for
be
the
to
invite.
Come. So appreciate it.
It's always good to. Always good to catch up with you fools, man.
Yep, right same on. To you, buddy.
Hello, and welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book, and together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our 9th season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, this is Chris Swinney, formerly of the Ataris and currently host of That One Time on Tour, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Have you ever wondered what it's really like on the road? The highs can be euphoric, but the lows can be crushing. Join me every week as I chat with industry pros about what it's like living out their wildest dream and, in some cases, their worst nightmare. Past guests of the show include members of NoFX, Pennywise, Bad Religion, and more. Listen and subscribe at SoundTalentMedia.com.